Today on Bold Steps with Mark Job, a lesson about the healing power of God.
There will never be healing in your life. There will never be an absolute dealing with the withered parts of your life until you are willing to take steps out of your comfort zone to deal with the tough areas of your life that God is asking you to deal with.
Welcome to another Bold Steps program with Mark Job. I'm Wayne Shepherd, and Mark is president of Moody Bible Institute and senior pastor of New Life Community Church in Chicago. Today, Mark, you begin a message from the book of Luke about the man with the withered hand and what we can learn from his encounter with Jesus.
This is such a powerful passage, Wayne, because it exposes the fact that we all have areas that we're ashamed of, we're embarrassed, areas of weakness that we don't want people to look at.
Yeah.
And that's what happened in this story. In fact, Wayne, you're always so official and professional here on the program.
Uh-oh.
Hey, you know, because there's only hundreds of thousands of people listening right now.
A mere 100,000 plus, right? Yeah, okay.
Why don't you just take a moment, go below the surface, and what's the withered hand that you want to share openly with everybody?
Do we
right
know
here?
Each other well enough at this point to do this? I'd really rather not.
Come on, Wayne. Just one little tidbit, something that you say, oh, this is a little bit embarrassing. I don't want people to know about.
How can I stay professional and do this? Okay, all right. Here's an announcer gaffe.
Okay.
Right? You don't spend all these years on the radio without making some mistakes, right? And I've made many of them, believe me. I introduced the song live one time, Just Think of Stepping on Shore. But I kind of got tongue-tied and said, Just Stink of Stepping on Shore. See,
great.
Is that work?
That works a little bit.
I'd rather forget it.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the point is, Wayne, like this man with the withered hand, and there's radio mistakes that you may make, but there are deeper areas that all of us, when we look at, we want to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And this story is about bringing to the front those areas that only Jesus can touch and heal. And we all have them. All of us do.
Yeah.
And so I believe that God is going to speak to some people through this message today.
Well, the message begins right now with Mark Job on Bold Steps.
It tells us in Luke chapter 6, by the way, Luke was a doctor, Dr. Luke. And he wrote the Gospel of Luke, but he also wrote the book of Acts. And so if you want to just kind of follow a story right along, you could read Luke and then you could read Acts, written by the same author. And it kind of Acts picks up where the Gospel of Luke left off. And Luke talks a lot about, he tells stories of Jesus. He talks a lot about healing. He's a doctor, a medical doctor, and so refers to the healings of Jesus. And in Luke chapter 6, we have a story of a healing, but it's a powerful story of a man that had a withered hand. It says, on another Sabbath, he, referring to Jesus, went into the synagogue. Now, there's two words that I need to define for you. Number one is the Sabbath, and number two is the synagogue. The Sabbath in the Jewish culture was the day of rest. It was the day when people worship. And it was part of the Mosaic law, the Old Testament law, that you were not to work on the Sabbath at all. You could not make food. You had to prepare it the day before and eat it later because that was considered work. You couldn't make mud to do bricks. That was considered work. You couldn't do any kind of labor of any kind. You could only walk so far because if you walked further than that, it was considered work. And so they were very strict at observing this. It was called the Sabbath, the day of rest. The word synagogue is another term that you'll find often in the New Testament, and it refers to the not the temple. There was something called the temple, and that is where you had the Holy of Holies and inner. The synagogue was a place, it was comparable to what we call a church today. It was the Jewish equivalent of a church. So it happens to be on the day of rest, and it happens to be in the synagogue in a church. On another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching. Jesus was considered a rabbi, a teacher, so he was teaching in a church-type setting. And a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. Some of your translations say withered. Now, here's what we know about this man. We don't know exactly how his hand became withered, but we know that it was his right hand, and we know that it was dysfunctional. It had become atrophied, withered. Now, there's some extra biblical teaching or some legends that tell us that this man was a stone cutter. In other words, he made his life off of cutting stone, which is the equivalent today of a bricklayer. That's what the homes and the temples and educational centers were made out of. They were made out of stone. And it was his right hand, which was the hand typically that most people use to work with, his primary earning hand. Now, in the Jewish culture, the right hand had several symbolisms to it. It was the hand upon which you bless people with. The right hand of blessing. If you as a father were going to bless your children, you would take your right hand and you would place your right hand upon the head of your children and you would bless them. Also in the Jewish culture, if you were to greet someone, it was rude to greet someone with your left hand because the right hand was the hand of greeting. In fact, it's still true in some Middle Eastern cultures that the left hand is used for unsavory things. Your toiletry issues, basically. I'm not going to get more in detail with that, but you didn't want to give someone your left hand because you didn't know where your left hand had been, basically. And so you always wanted to greet people with your left hand. It was an insult to greet people with your left hand. And so you always greeted people with your left hand, with your right hand. You typically worked with your right hand. You blessed with your right hand. So this man with the shriveled right hand, according to the verb tense here, it seems like this man had not always been that way. So we can deduct that this man probably had had an accident of some sort or had been hit with a disease of some sort later on in life, and the shriveled hand had taken away his ability to work at his job. It had taken away his ability to bless his children. It had taken away his ability to interact socially on a normal level with other people. In essence, his shriveled hand had taken away his dignity. I started to think about the shriveled hand of this man. As I thought about it, it struck me that we all have shriveled areas of our life. You see, what withered represents is it represents that life has left. If you have a flower that's withered, it means that that flower no longer is generating life. We look at the petals and they wither and they fall off. It means it's dead. And when it's withered, we throw it away. It no longer has life pouring into it, pumping into it. And so it represents something that used to work, something that used to function, something that used to be life-giving, but no longer is. It represents, in fact, something that's shameful to us. I believe we all have withered parts of our life that represent shame to us, failures, times where we blew it, things that we would rather tear out of the pages of history of our life and act like it never existed. Our failures represent withered portions of our life. Some of us have been to places and done things that we just want to forget about. We want it to be over. We don't want anybody to mention it again. We want it to be a part of our past. We have areas of our life that make us embarrassed, that people stare at. We don't want them to see. We want to hide. Some feel it's shameful to us. It represents dysfunction in our life. It could be a secret battle of depression that you have in your life that you don't want anybody to know about, that you go through these tunnels of darkness that come upon you and you can't escape them, and it's your withered portion that you like to hide, these deep times of depression that you don't want anybody to know about. It could represent an eating disorder, bulimia, that you do in the privacy of your own bathroom, and because of this compulsive, addictive thing that you need to maintain that weight, that you binge and throw up in the bathroom, and it represents a dysfunction. You know it's wrong. You've tried to stop. You know it's not healthy for you, but you know what? It's just a part of you that represents some shame to your life, and you don't know how to get rid of it. You don't know how to overcome it, but it's there. Maybe you've been through a nasty, tragic divorce, and it was hurtful to your children and hurtful to your marriage, and it represents a dark section of your life. And people still run into you and ask about your ex-wife, and you have to explain it all over how it didn't work out. Explain all over how you're no longer married, and they, oh. And you just don't want to run into them, and then you change your name back to what your name used to be, and people still call you by your old married name, and it reminds you every time that, yeah, it was a bad season, and yeah, it didn't work out, and your kids are involved in the middle of it. It's just a withered portion of your life. Maybe it was a tragedy of an abortion at one point in your life, in your early 20s, and when you didn't know what to do, and your parents don't even know about it, but it was that secret escape to that clinic and that abortion, and every time that birthday of that child's abortion comes around, no one else knows about it. No one else calls up to say how you're doing, but you remember it. It still haunts you in your mind. You still think about how old that child would be at this time, at this age. And it's a shriveled portion of your life. You don't want people to know about it. You don't advertise it. But it's there. You see, every single person in this auditorium, we have shriveled areas in our life. All of us do. All of us.
We're going to pause the message right there for a moment. You're listening to Bold Steps with Mark Jobe. We'll pick back up in Luke chapter 6 here in a moment, along with some encouragement to help deal with those difficult areas of life. But quickly, I want to remind you that if you ever have trouble sticking around for an entire radio broadcast, you can always listen at your own pace anytime by subscribing to our podcast. It's available on most podcast platforms, and you can find us using your podcast app and searching for Bold Steps with Dr. Mark Jobe. And Mark, also, I want to share this note that came in from one of our listeners in California listening to K-Wave. Danny says, "Hi, Mark. Thank you so much for being used by God. I've been listening to you for so long. I'm 24 years old." Well, hasn't been listening that long then, has he? "I just can't tell you how many times God has used you to speak to me. Your current series, Unstuck, has really been helping me in this season of life. I had to send this because of how many times God has used you to speak to me. I love listening to your messages." Danny in California.
Hey, Danny from California. Let me tell you, Danny, that is so encouraging to me. I have a son that just turned 23, so I feel like I know that age group very well. And it's not an easy time to be a 23-year-old in today's society, but that word is encouraging. So keep following Jesus, and I'm sure he's going to use you in ways that you can't even imagine.
We'd love to hear your story. Would you contact us through our website, boldstepsradio.org? You have no idea how encouraging it is to know that God is using what we do in the studio to impact your life. boldstepsradio.org. Now back to the story of the man with a shriveled hand and what we can learn from his interaction with Jesus. Here again is Mark.
The thing is that this man had a physical shriveling. It's hard to hide. And the Bible tells us that the Pharisees, in verse 7, it introduces the Pharisees, and it says the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. You see, the Pharisees, some of you know about the Pharisees, but the Pharisees were the very religious people. There was about 6,000 Pharisees in Jerusalem, and they were people that liked to pray in public, but not in private. They liked to sit in places of prominence, and they liked people to think that they were very religious. They knew rituals, but didn't know the heart of God. They were judgmental, critical. They looked down at sinners. They were people that considered themselves very self-righteous. And it's interesting to me that although they were the most religious people, they were also the people most against Jesus. Isn't that interesting? That sometimes it's the most religious that are the most anti-Christ. Do you know that you can become religious and not really become like Jesus? Do you realize there's people that are religious and are far from God? Do you understand that? That you can be highly religious but yet miss the heart of God. In fact, my goal, I've told you this often, I'll tell you it again, my goal is not to make you more religious. I don't want you to become more religious. If by religious we mean that you learn a religious culture and rituals, I don't want you to become more religious. I want you to become more spiritual, and I want you to become more authentic in your following of Jesus Christ, not more religious. You see, the Pharisees were known for their judgment of people. They looked at sinners. They looked at Jesus. And one of their big complaints with Jesus is, how come you hang around with people that are seedy? Do you realize that that was one of the big complaints about Jesus? Jesus, you let prostitutes come near you. Ooh. You let them touch your feet. You hang out with people that others know are really bad sinners. One of the big complaints about Jesus is you allow people around you that come from bad backgrounds, that have a bad history, and you accept them, hug them, embrace them, talk with them. And do you know where they've been and what they've done and how long they've been there? Jesus, if you're really such a holy person, how could you hang out with people that are so unholy? You see, the Pharisees had a religious mentality, and they judged and looked down at people that they considered to be less righteous than they were. I believe there's so many people turned off to Christianity because they've been around Pharisee-like attitudes in Christianity. They've been around people that were religious but not like Jesus. They've been around people that judged and pointed and put down and said, you're a sinner and this and that, but they were not like the heart of Jesus. I believe that's turned so many people off Christianity. I believe there's tons of people out in the streets that don't attend any church today because they have a view of church people that they're sort of hypocritical and judgmental. They're not against God, but they're against church. And they say, we don't believe in organized religion. I always say, join us. We're disorganized religion. I think you'll like us. Hey, but God forbid that we ever get so religious that we develop the heart of a Pharisee. God forbid that New Life Community Church would ever develop a Pharisee type of religion. And what I mean by that is the doors of this church need to be constantly open to people, no matter what background they come from, no matter what neighborhood they come from, no matter what they've done in life or where they've been in life. Hopefully the doors of this church will be wide open for people to come here that haven't been in church in a long time, that may have never been in church, and people that are coming here that really desperately need God. And this is the place they need to come, and they don't need to be judged when they walk in these doors like, hey, do you measure up to our standard? In fact, if someone walks in these doors on Sunday morning and they have the hangover look and a breath that speaks strongly of the hangover look, and I've talked to people on Sunday morning here, just smelling their breath almost gets you high. Whew. It's the, I've been partying all night, and I haven't shaved, and I haven't changed, and I'm miserable inside, and I showed up in church because someone invited me. My eyes are red and glazed because, man, I've been out there. But I came to this church hoping that I would find hope somewhere, knowing that where I'm, what I'm doing and where I'm at is just causing me to be more and more empty. But in my heart, I know that my solution is in God. And if someone walks in the doors like that, and you sort of scoot over like, hey, don't let me sit next to this guy. And sort of like, what are you doing in church? Thank God they're here. But you see, a church that has a Pharisee mentality, where we point out the withered aspects in people's lives, without grace and love, we will never bring healing to people's lives. If all we do is point out the withered aspects of people's life without grace and love. Notice what Jesus does with this man who is in front of all these Pharisees and in the synagogue, already self-conscious about his withered hand, because the Pharisees believed that if you had a physical deformity, that physical deformity was a result of the judgment of God. And they were fond of saying when someone had an injury or a physical deformity, who sinned, him or his parents? And the Bible says in verse 8, look at what it says. And they were debating about whether it was right to heal on the Sabbath or not. See, religious people get caught up in religious arguments that really don't matter. Here's a man that needs healing, and all they're concerned about is whether Jesus is going to heal on the Sabbath or not. Please give me a break. This man needs healing, and you're wondering if it's right for Jesus to heal on the Sabbath, because healing could be considered a form of work? The Bible says in verse 8, Jesus knew what they were thinking. I love that about Jesus. You see, I don't know what you're thinking. You could sit in your chair right now and smile at me, and I could think, well, they're with me. And you could be thinking, I wonder where his car's at so I can slash his tires. You know, I don't know what you're thinking. But the thing about Jesus is Jesus always knows what we're thinking. You see, right now, as you sit in this place, the heart of God, the Spirit of God searches through and knows exactly where you're at, knows exactly where you're thinking. You see, He knows if you're running or trying to hide. He knows what you've struggled with this week. He knows who you've talked to, where you've been, what you've watched on television, what you've clicked on your computer screen this week. He knows your conversations, where you've been, who you've been with. He knows how long you've been there. He knows the neighborhoods you've driven through. He knows what music you've listened to. He knows what's gone through your head. He knows every single thing about you, every single thing. There's nothing to hide.
Tough challenge today from Mark Jobe on Bold Steps, but also a wonderful look at how God can use our imperfections to find wholeness. We'll go deeper in this profound lesson on the man with the withered hand when we return for part two of this message on tomorrow's program. In the meantime, we'd love to connect with you and hear about your own story. If Bold Steps has played a meaningful part in your spiritual journey, we'd encourage you to reach out and share that with us by visiting our website at boldstepsradio.org. And for the wives and mothers and daughters who are looking to make a greater kingdom impact in their community, Pastor Mark has a unique resource to tell us about.
Women's ministry is not just a group at your local church. It's meant to be an organic, daily, and thriving part of Christian living. And if you're looking for more practical ways to engage with Christian women in your own community, let me send you a copy of a book entitled Adorned. In this empowering resource, best-selling author Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth lays out the biblical model for Titus 2 of a woman whose faith creates true fellowship. Engaging woman to woman, older to younger, day to day, life to life, that's the Titus 2 vision. And that's the challenge you can accept today by requesting your copy of Adorned. Don't let comfort, shame, or insecurity stop you from playing your part in God's kingdom work. Learn what it means to be adorned with the gospel and to adorn the gospel in the eyes of others through this insightful Bold Step gift. I'll be happy to send it right to your doorstep when you give a gift of any amount to support the ministry of Bold Steps.
Thank you, Mark. To give and request your copy of Adorned, just visit boldstepsradio.org or give us a call. The number is 844-615-7363. That's 844-615-7363. You can also send your gift and request for the book in the mail by writing to us at Bold Steps, 820 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60610. And before we close, let me invite you to join the growing list of faithful listeners we call Bold Partners. Thanks to their generous and monthly gift, our Bold Partners are helping bring the gospel to new cities and new countries around the world. To learn more about this global outreach and how you can play a part, just visit our website. Again, that's boldstepsradio.org. On behalf of the entire Bold Steps team, thank you for your prayers and financial support. I'm Wayne Shepherd signing off for now, but we'll see you again tomorrow for part of the conclusion of today's message on spiritual healing, right here on Bold Steps with Mark Joe. Bold Steps is a production of Moody Radio, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute.